And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky here. And Bucky, we got a trade, man.
Man, we got a trade that really changes the landscape of the draft. You're talking about putting everybody under pressure. The New York Jets have put everyone under pressure because however it goes at 1 and 2, the rest of the draft is going to be bananas after that.
Yeah, we've got a lot of ground to cover on that trade. A lot of thoughts for several teams that are going to be impacted by this move. A little bit later on in the episode, after we go a deep dive into this Colts-Jets trade, you're going to talk about Ndamukong Suh, where he could land, where's the best fit for him. Some of the more recent free agent signings, our thoughts there. Also going to touch on some tough evaluations in this draft class. And we've got an interview coming up with one of the best players in the draft. I think he's the best tight end in the draft, in Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina, who's got a fascinating story.
Fascinating story. Big-time player. The guy has a lot of buzz in the scouting community.
All right, let's jump in first, though, here on the Colts side of this thing. The Indianapolis Colts, we're sitting at number 3. They drop down from 3 to 6. The Jets come up, and we'll get to the Jets and their thoughts here in just a second. They end up getting 2 second-rounders this year, the Colts do, from the Jets, and next year's second-rounder. So 3 second-round picks to slide back from 3 to 6. So it's a fascinating move for the Colts. I think it's a home run. But, Buck, before we weigh in, here's what their GM, Mr. Ballard, had to say about this draft haul.
Since Monday and Tuesday, we had been kind of back and forth with the Jets about moving back. They had an interest to move up to 3 and kind of went back and forth for the last 4 or 5 days. Talked to a couple other teams, but we still wanted to stay in position in that top 10 where we could still get a premium player. And we feel like at 6, we'll still be able to acquire a premium player. Plus, being able to pick up the 2 twos this year and the 2 next year, that gives us 4 picks this year in the top 50 picks of the draft, and then 3 picks next year, you know, 1 in the 1st and 2 in 2nd. So it gives us a chance to really replenish our young talent and to start building a core of young talent that we need to do.
That was Chris Ballard, the GM of the Indianapolis Colts, talking about that trade process. Let's just start, first of all, and look at this from the Colts' vantage point. This is a no-brainer for them, right?
Well, it is a no-brainer. I think what he pointed out is very, very critical. 4 picks in the top 50. Most NFL teams are comprised of 1st and 2nd-round picks. If you really think about what we focus our time on as evaluators, you have to get the first 2 picks right. You have to get it right in the first 2 rounds because those are the guys that you're really counting on to not only make immediate contributions, but to be the core of your team for a 4, 5, 6-year period. So when you look at the Indianapolis Colts, and even with or without Andrew Luck, this is a team on paper that has a lot of holes that they need to fill. They need more playmakers, more dynamic people that can be difference makers on both sides of the ball, and they have to find a way to gain ground on those within the division. We've seen the Jacksonville Jaguars become a playoff team, made it to the championship game. The Tennessee Titans made the playoffs and also have a roster that is young and still growing. The Houston Texans, if you think about what they were able to do with Deshaun Watson, they looked like a playoff team until he got hurt. They are way behind. They have a lot to ground to make up, and the only way you can do it is you got to knock it out of the park in the draft, and the best way to do it is to give yourself more lottery tickets.
I ended up writing about this in the notebook that's going to be up on NFL.com when you're listening to this. And sometimes it's interesting to see the numbers of the players, right? So you go, okay, 3 second-round picks. Okay, let's put some names on it to try and make it a little more clear in terms of what this could mean for the Indianapolis Colts. So I went through it. I think there's a real scenario where at number 6, because the run-on quarterbacks, that Bradley Chubb, there's a chance he falls in their lap, which is pretty crazy to say here. If not Bradley Chubb, I think Quentin Nelson would be another one would be there. But let's just say Bradley Chubb for this exercise. Pick number 37, which they acquired, Tyrell Crosby, who is a starting tackle coming out of the University of Oregon. I think he's a really good player, solid player. So you get a chance to get a starting tackle to go along with your defensive end. Then at pick 49, I just wrote in there Lorenzo Carter, who's a linebacker with some pass rush ability as well as the ability to run, cover tight ends, do all that stuff. A freaky athlete. I think he ran, let's see, what did he run? He ran ridiculous, 4.5.
Oh, he was good.
6.047, so almost 6.5, 250, ran 4.5 flat. So a freaky athlete. Now remember, you're going to get Malik Hooker healthy off of last year's injury. Now you start looking at a defense, and you've got Chubb, Lorenzo Carter, you've got Malik Hooker. You've got some young building blocks here for this core going forward, and that's not even counting. We don't know who next year's second-round pick is going to be, which they acquired from the Jets. So when I look at this from the Colts standpoint, they had to do this deal. And I know for a fact that they were reaching out to teams. I talked to folks that were at Pro Days and said it was not a secret that Chris Ballard was aggressively trying to get out of there, which we can get into the other impact of that, like with Buffalo and what does that mean, because I'm guarantee you Buffalo and Arizona were two of those teams trying to get up there to see if they get a quarterback.
Yeah, I think this is a great move for the Indianapolis Colts. They have a lot of holes to fill. They have players that they need to hit on to really help that defense and even some playmakers on offense that eventually they'll have to address. But in looking at the way they're trying to remake this team, Frank Reich is going to handle the offense. They're going to make sure that it's an offense-centric team. But to do it on defense, you have to be able to play with young players. They brought in Matt Eberflus to be their defensive coordinator. He's going to do some of the stuff that they did in Dallas, which really was a simple system that allowed you to get your young players on the field, play a lot of cover one, some Tampa two, and then just allow those guys to get really, really good because they do it over and over and over again. Offensively, you still have to figure out, what do I need to surround Andrew Luck with? Do I need to upgrade the line? Do I need to get some more pass catchers that can help him? We have T.Y. Hilton, but who else on that offense really scares you? I don't think there's anyone. So he understood that one player was not going to get it done for them. He parlayed that pick into a number of players. Now he has to pick the right players.
I like the fact, too, when you're making trades for future picks, when you keep in mind the track record of the team you're trading with, there's a very real chance based on recent history that you're picking another. That's a top 10 pick in the second round based on what the Jets have been. And especially if they're going to be putting in a young quarterback, there'll be some growing pains there. So I do think that's a no-brainer move for the Colts there. Let's get to the Jets side of this thing, Buck. The couple points here. Obviously, it's rare you see somebody make a trade this early to number three, because it's not like you're guaranteed getting the number one or number two player on your board. You might get your third player on the board. Yep. So they had to be in love with three different quarterbacks in this class. Now, I know this negotiation, according to Peter King and his notebook, said it started on a Monday. So it took a little while before they were able to get this thing done. I do think the Jets were talking to a bunch of teams. But it happened right after the Rosen Pro Day. And the immediate reaction was they saw Rosen and they were like, boom, okay, we're in. So we feel comfortable with two other guys and Rosen's our third. Or, you know, however they get to that three.
Yep.
The other part of it is, we're saying they love three quarterbacks, but I don't think they love the fourth. If you love the fourth, you might be more willing to sit there.
Separation.
So either they saw something they love from Rosen that included him into the three, or they something they didn't like and said, okay, he's number four, and we don't want number four. We want to make sure we get one of the three.
Yes, and I think when you make the move, you're putting yourself in range. We always do this on Path to the Draft, which premieres Monday.
There you go.
On NFL Network.
5 days a week, 3 o'clock, or 3 o'clock West Coast, 6 o'clock
East Coast. 6 o'clock East Coast time. We do this in a cluster buster. So what this tells me, all those quarterbacks are pretty much rated together at some point. Either one is way up and then two or three are right there.
Yeah.
They feel good enough about whoever falls in whatever order they have them. I'm a guess and say it's Darnold, it's Rosen, and Allen. Any of those three guys, they're comfortable with being the quarterback of the future for them. They're now in range to basically just sit and wait, see what the Browns are going to do. Because now I think you've always said that the Browns had to take a quarterback at one. Right now,
they're going to be gone.
They absolutely have to take one. If they're going to take one, they have to take it at number one because it won't necessarily be there at four. So the Browns are taking one. Now it's on whatever the Giants do. They get a chance to either pick their second guy or they'll take the third guy. So win, place, or show. Either way, the New York Jets are now going to have the quarterback that they want.
All right, so hear me out on this theory, because I'm trying to figure out who their quarterback is, right? Let's at least – if you're hearing the same thing I'm hearing, everything is pointing towards Sam Darnold being number one
right.
to Cleveland, okay? So if we put
– So he's out.
So Darnold's out. I think – and we'll get to the Giants here in a moment about what this means for them, but – we'll just say that they take a quarterback, and I'll explain it here in a minute. So let's say the Giants took let's give them Rosen, okay? So then now we're here. This is where the trade took place. The Jets are at three. Darnold and Rosen are off the board. So in this scenario, it's Mayfield versus Josh Allen,
mm-hmm.
correct? So my theory is when you look at coaching hires, we say this all the time. You always hire the exact opposite of what you just fired. Mm-hmm. So you've got a player's coach. We're going to go hire a disciplinarian. You had a hard, real tough. Yeah, we need to get a player's coach. Get the op. That didn't work. Let's go in the opposite direction. So this regime with the Jets has drafted one quarterback in the first two rounds.
Hackenberg.
Okay, Christian Hackenberg. Christian Hackenberg, Buck, 6'4", 235 pounds.
Very similar to Josh
Allen. He was a 53.5% completion rate in college. The opposite of him is Mayfield, not Josh Allen. Josh Allen, who I think Josh Allen's a much better player than Christian Hackenberg.
Yep.
But if you're going to go with the opposite theory, which I'm operating under right here, Baker Mayfield couldn't be more polar opposite than Christian Hackenberg. Personality, size, skill sets, like they're polar opposite guys. You with me on this?
I understand your theory and your premise.
But you're not jumping in. You're watching you're watching the roller coaster go, but you don't want to hop on.
I don't want to hop on all the way because here's what I have a tough time. I have a tough time believing that Baker Mayfield has a grade that puts him in the top three. Like, I just still have a hard time.
I have a hard time saying that on their
board.
We need to get some CSI crime scene music for this.
This is a deep theory. This is deep theory stuff right here.
I love it.
No, because I just wonder, like, of all the players we're talking about Barkley, Chubb. I mean, we're talking about
Bradley Chubb, Tyrell Crosby, Lorenzo Carter, and next year's two. You just traded.
Right.
To move up for this.
So you're saying it's almost like those T-shirts you see now, Mayfield versus everybody. Like, it's tough for me to fully embrace that theory.
Opposite theory.
Yeah, and I get that. I actually think this is a Josh Allen move in terms of –
That's what I hear from everybody around the league. Everybody around the league says the three quarterbacks are going to go. And Mayfield is not one of them.
He's not. And the reason it's the Josh Allen thing is we are going to do it even better than we try to do it with Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah.
We're going to make sure that we are not putting him on the field no way, no how. We have Josh McCown. If Josh McCown rolls his ankle, Teddy Bridgewater goes in.
Yep.
Like, you're three layers removed from being able to get in the game. And that gives Josh Allen
– it's like a game of dodgeball. You're like, just hang behind these two guys.
Hang behind. And then
protect you.
And so I think that is why, because of the moves that they made, that this is a red shirt. This is a red shirt deal for Josh Allen. And I'm believing that they think Josh Allen has superior talent to what they had in Hackenberg, and they're willing to go all in on that. Mayfield.
That's my Mayfield theory. That's my opposite theory. Now, let's get to the Giants because I want to get to what this means for him. There's so many different levels to this thing, so many different areas you can go into. The Giants were picking at two. So a couple different things are in play here. A couple different things had to have happened. The Jets obviously made the pick to three. You'd rather go to pick two because then you're going to get a greater chance to get the guy that you covet. So surely they made the call to the Giants. So the Giants, one of two things happened here. One is – they're just not going to deal with the Jets because same stadium, same city. We're not going to gift wrap you a quarterback.
And they would have to hear about it.
That's what I'm saying.
They would have to hear about it.
They share a stinking stadium, and you're going to gift you have a quarterback that's coming to the end, and you're going to gift wrap the Jets a quarterback. So that could just be a philosophy thing. We just say we're not going to deal with them and give them a quarterback, or they did consider the offer. But they turned it down. And I just can't imagine a scenario. As much as I love Saquon Barkley, he's the best player in the draft because of the position he plays at running back. I can't see, again, I put the names on these picks, that you turned down a chance to get Bradley Chubb, Tyrell Crosby, Lorenzo Carter, and next year's two so that you could sit and take a running back. The only reason you would turn that haul down is if you yourself are in the quarterback market and you found one that you love and you do not want to get out of range. So that's why when I look at this now, I do think it's going to go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback when it's all said and done. I think the Giants have a quarterback in mind. And for me, when I look at it, I wrote down Rosen in the scenario just a second ago. But we talked about it when we were first talking about these quarterbacks. What's the best fit, right? And I said, look, choose early for Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. But if you just look at – if I'm Josh Allen, where do I want to go? The New York Giants, because I do not have to get on the field. And it's not like – like Josh McCown might give you 5 or 6 good weeks and he could kind of fall apart and you got to go play. Eli Manning, as we saw last year, he's not going anywhere, Buck. It's your guy. He's not going anywhere. So you do not have to force him on the field. The Giants, everybody seems to be hearing the same thing. They think Eli has a couple more years left. Not 1 year, but maybe a couple more years. Couple more years.
Things change.
So this, to me, if I'm Josh Allen – the New York Giants is the perfect place for you. Whereas Josh Rosen didn't want to sit for anybody. I'm just saying, if they take Josh Rosen, that might not end well, because Josh Rosen, when Eli has his first four-pick game, is going to be around the facility going, are you serious? I'm not playing? What are we missing here, guys? Like, I think that could get messy with Josh Rosen.
I do.
I think that if you were going to say just the perfect fits for these guys.
See, and I think the opposite, because I think the Giants are a perfect fit for Rosen.
What are you going to do when he's not playing?
Well, he's going
to lose his mind.
He's not going to lose his mind. Come on.
He is going to lose his – I'm the most polished guy that's come out in a long time. I am ready to play.
He's ready to play.
Dude in front of me is completing 58, 60% of his passes.
His whole life. Eli Manning has.
We're up, win one, lose one. What are we doing here, guys?
Yeah, right.
Let's go.
What are we doing? A little pressure.
I think they're married to Eli, and I think
they are married to Eli. That's why
you don't want anybody that's gonna crowd him.
And that's why
Josh Allen's not gonna crowd him.
And I think based on the marriage with Eli and what he revealed last year, we can't bring in a quarterback. Period. We can't bring in a quarterback until Eli's out the door.
But then you would have taken that trade.
No,
you had to have taken that trade.
No,
you'd rather have Saquon than that haul of.
Oh, it's not Saquon. It's not Saquon. As much as I want them to
take Saquon. Quentin Nelson.
Yep.
So hold up. Yep. Hold. You're seriously.
I'm not.
You could have got him at six.
Oh, no. He's not going to be there.
You might have got him at six.
Might.
Bucky.
No.
You could have had four players, and you're going to take – I love him. Second best player in the draft. I'm not going to take a guard when I could get four players for the price of that one guard.
DJ.
Four.
DJ. You can't worry about what's out there. You know what you are? You're on the dating game.
Who is this guy? I mean, I like Quentin Nelson.
You're on the dating game.
A guard for four starters?
You're on the dating game, and you're looking at door number two and door number three. We don't know what's behind there. Those imaginary players that you're talking about, picks, this and that, that's nice. We don't need that. You know what we need? We need to make sure that our guy, our two-time Super Bowl MVP, two-time Super Bowl champ quarterback, is comfortable. Because you know what happens when he's uncomfortable?
We got Nate Solder.
You know what happens when he's uncomfortable? He starts whining and crying. So I don't want to deal with the whining and crying. We both are parents. I don't want to hear it. So what they're going to do is they can give him a pacifier. You know what the pacifier is? Quentin Nelson, a big body, to go with Nate Solder. So now I got two big bodies to make sure that I don't have to hear Eli Manning crying in the middle of the night. He's protected. He feels better. Wow. I got Odell Jr. coming back. That is why. Now, keep in mind, I'm on record saying I would never take a guard in the top 10. I would never take a guard in the top 10. There've only been four taken in the draft since 2001. None of those guys have been, like, dominant players. And all the guards that were taken were guys that were swing players, guys that were tackles in college that they moved inside. Quentin Nelson is a hog molly. That's how David Gettleman refers to the big guys. He's going to take a hog molly to put beside Nate Solder, because what has been all the criticism for the New York Giants? Oh, we don't have an offensive line. You got to protect Eli. You got to make it better. Da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to silence the critics. I'm going to take the guy that everyone says is safe. And as you told me, if we're playing golf, I'm hit it right down the fairway.
All right, I'm going to just blow this apart here.
You can't blow it apart.
So in your scenario, they stay where they are and they get, wait for it, Quentin Nelson.
Right.
Okay.
I think this is a guy you said he's going to be a 10-time Pro Bowler, right?
He will be.
Right.
He very well could be.
We all like that, right?
This is the Bucky plan.
We like that.
I'm going to write BB plan.
We like BB that, right?
Plan. And then now I'm going to give you the DJ plan here. Let's go. We make that trade. We go to six. And I'll even say that Quentin Nelson's not there.
He's gone.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're still going to get Bradley Chubb, an elite defensive
Are we sure he's going to be there?
Maybe we're going to get Bradley Chubb, Quentin Nelson, or Saquon Barkley. I'm fine with any of the three. So they get Chubb. Then at pick number 37, guess what, Buck? We're going to go ahead and take a guy who you're going to get a great value on because he's a little bit hurt with the pec, but he's a great player, Billy Price. Billy Price is going to start day one at either center or either guard spot. He's excellent. He's a first-round caliber player.
His pec is hurt.
At pick 37.
His pec is hurt.
At pick number 49, if you want inside.
You're buying the sofa with the scratcher.
I'm going to go Austin Corbett. So you have one offensive lineman. I've got two, plus I've got the best pass rusher in the draft. How can you do that?
Easy.
They would have had to trade back.
We're not taking a guard at two.
No way.
It's either guard or Saquon, because here's what you're missing. This is what you're missing in the evaluation, because you're just doing it in a singular focus. Like you're not logically thinking. You're not doing it. Here's what had to happen during the interview with Pat Shurmur. Hey, Pat, you know that guy that plays behind?
He's the best.
Eli? Davis Webb?
Oh, no. He doesn't. No. I like
that.
Okay. Like,
no. The guy, Davis Webb, because last year you were able to do it with Case Keenum, who everyone said can't play. I mean, you had Sam Bradford playing at a high level in the one game that we saw him. What do you think you can do with Davis Webb? Oh, I can do it. I can make it work. So now what you're looking at is, oh, this is Quentin Nelson versus Josh Rosen. No. It's Quentin Nelson and Davis Webb over Josh Rosen or Josh Allen. They like that scenario better. I got my young guy developing. He'll be a fourth-year player by the time he gets on the road. You know who else was like that? Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe they think Davis Webb is their Jimmy Garoppolo. Just saying.
Let's just throw that out there.
I just needed a minute. I needed a minute to collect myself a little bit there.
That's what it is. That's what the deal is.
Davis Webb.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Get out of here.
He's Jimmy Garoppolo Jr.
Look, here's the other thing, though. We'll go on over here. Cleveland, look, this trade to me, you talked about the fact that it ensures that they're going to take a quarterback at one, which we've been saying for a while now. Mm-hmm. And now I think you got to be stoked if you're Cleveland because a couple things are going to happen. Either what you're saying is going to happen and one of the other quarterbacks is going to still be there at four for Cleveland. And in that case, it's Buffalo, it's Arizona, it's potentially Miami, and I would keep an eye on Baltimore. I would not sleep on them either. That phone's going to be ringing at four. If they want to get out of there, they'll have plenty of options if a non-quarterback goes to the Giants. If a quarterback does go to the Giants, they're going to get a heck of a player that's going to fall right in their lap. That whole Saquon Barkley scenario with Darnold at one, Barkley at four is very real. Whether or not Dorsey will do it, I don't know. Maybe he does.
How about Bradley Chubb?
That's what I'm saying. You're going to get one of those premier players.
BPA, best player available. They get to sit and just hang out and take really, really good players. And it really depends on who comes up and what they're offering if they want to get cute and trade out the pick because they are guaranteed to get two premium players, to use Ballard's word.
Yeah.
Two elite prospects should fall to them at one and four. I don't know how they can pass that up. They already – I mean, how many more picks do they need, DJ?
No.
They have 50 picks.
That's the whole thing. Eventually, you got to make some picks and get some good players.
Yeah, they got 50
that's
picks.
A challenge there. Right. To me, I would love it if I were them. Bradley Chubb. I know that they have a need.
I actually like taking Bradley Chubb over Saquon.
When you have Myles Garrett and Ogba, who's a good player, but now you put Bradley Chubb.
But you need three.
I know, but just think about those must-have moments where you can kick Miles inside a little bit if you want to.
Yeah.
Let him get on a sloppy guard.
I think
you have those two kids coming off the edge.
Look, having been in the league, one of the first things that happens the Monday after the Super Bowl, everyone says at the meeting, they talk about the
what
team
they
that won.
Yeah, what they do.
And the one thing that we can take away from the Philadelphia Eagles, man, they had a bunch of pass rushers.
Can't have too many.
So if you're the Cleveland Browns, you have the opportunity to put a young Myles Garrett with a young Bradley Chubb and Emmanuel Ogba. All those guys are in the same age range. You get to develop a monster on the defense. And that division is coming back towards them.
Yeah.
So you talk about having an opportunity to build a superpower. The Cleveland Browns have that. I don't think I auction the pick. I think I sit there and wait. And if the pass rusher comes to me, we are running the card up to the table.
I'm with you on that one. And I do. The more I think about it, it makes perfect sense. You got to pick. Like, you guys have been passing forever and collecting picks. You got to get some players. Let's get that done.
Yeah.
So there's Cleveland. Now Buffalo. Talked about those teams that could potentially come up. Buffalo, I don't know what you offer the Giants, but to me it's trying to get to the Giants. If you can't get to the Giants, you're trying to get to four. If you can't get to four, I don't.
I know what you do.
What do you do?
You print out those A.J. McCarron jerseys.
Oh, just roll with it?
Because you just swapped out Tyrod Taylor for A.J. McCarron.
Oof.
That's where you're at right now if you're Buffalo. I don't know. Like, I don't know who else to tell. Right, hold on. It's a competition. A.J. McCarron or Nate Peterman.
Yeah.
So
open competition.
That's who it is because, man.
I don't know if they can get up there.
And not only that. So now, here's what we're talking about. You talk about pressure. So say you get up there, and let's just say they throw out all those picks that they've acquired, the multiple third-rounders, the second round, like all of that for the quarterback that they're picking.
Yeah.
Man, that quarterback better be a G. He better be a guy. And so
– You know what? It's interesting to me. I would not be shocked if – so they can't get up, right? And say the quarterbacks go boom, 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 boom. So all
they
four.
Get to six
so,
to the Colts.
But
the Colts trade back.
The Colts could come back again. That would make some sense.
Colts trade back, and maybe they get a six, and then maybe they have
the Colts. The Colts actually might be in the prime position because they can auction that pick to all those teams we just mentioned. Because I don't – Denver, I think, sticks, and I don't think they're taking a quarterback. I think they'll stick and take a player.
So the Colts are back in play. And depending on who that fourth quarterback is, Allen, Mayfield, whoever –
But let's just say this. Let's say with Buffalo. Well, first of all, the other side of this Buffalo thing is I think the Jets kind of blocked them twice.
Oh, they got them. Got them boxed out.
So they end up getting traded up to take a spot that Buffalo would have loved to get to at number three. They also re-signed Josh McCown, who Peter King had mentioned was being courted by Buffalo to come in and their bridge quarterback. Josh McCown, one thing about Josh, if you've ever been around him, he is
nice guy, great dude.
He is great for young quarterbacks. So
He shares the information.
Yes, there was a market for him, and so they kept him from a team in the division. Then they ended up moving up and taking a pick that the team in the division won.
Yep.
So it's interesting to see how that all happens. But I'll say, let's say Miami, Baltimore, Arizona ends up making that trade up with the Colts at six, right? So Buffalo is struck out.
Oh.
They're stuck at 12.
Oh.
Would it shock you, because we've seen it done in this league many times before, 12th pick in the draft, and we're all sitting here going, well, they missed their window, and all of a sudden that card gets turned in with the 12th pick, the Buffalo Bills select from Oklahoma State, quarterback Mason Rudolph.
No, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me, because I think there's some people that like him. I think the love for Mason Rudolph all over the league is up and down.
Yeah.
Because when I was at his pro day last week, they were I had scouts, sixth, seventh round pick. But then I had some other guys like, fuck, is it me? But I think this guy can play.
Yeah.
I think this guy can play in the league. So
how did he look for your eyes?
He threw it. But I mean, he threw it pretty well. But he was exactly what I thought he was. To me, he is a small ball quarterback. He is a hit and run type guy. He is going to just advance the ball down the field. He's not necessarily going to be a gunslinger and a Pat Mahomes. He's going to be a very controlled player. And I think that you have to have the right pieces around him for him to flourish. But in terms of the off-the-field stuff, I can see how a team that fancies himself as a blue-collar team, a coach that loves blue-collar guys, could like him, because all the intangibles. We interviewed him at the Senior Bowl. You know, he's going to check the box in all those categories.
Nice.
And then he throws it well enough that you're like, okay, I can envision putting it around him. Now, but if you take a Mason Rudolph, which might be smart for them, and even if we said that's a reach at 12, if you're the Buffalo Bills, then you have to take the rest of those picks and you have to make sure that you surround him with enough weapons to allow him to do what he does. Because right now, when I look at this team was great in terms of the way they played collectively. But on paper, offensively, you have Shady McCoy and you don't have much else. You got Charles Clay at tight end. But outside of that, they don't have upper echelon players on the perimeter, and they haven't signed any in free agency.
I know the concern among Bills fans would, do we just EJ Manuel it again? Did we reach?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's going to be the thing. Like, I mean, look, when they made the move to get rid of Tyrod Taylor so early, they kind of put themselves out there. And now you have to kind of show your fan base, we're upgrading the position. And so
you got to walk away with one.
You got to walk away with something. You have to walk away with something that provides your fan base with hope. And even though we say outside noise shouldn't trickle inside, there's a lot more pressure. Like the one thing, and look, I love those guys, Brandon Bean and Joe Shane and all my guys that work there, Lake Dawson, whatever. Like, I know that. But when that trade hit the ticker, man, that pressure ratcheted up in the building. One Bills drive, everyone is like, oh.
Uh-oh.
So now they gotta go make a move. So now it's just a matter of, you hope your grades marry up to the player that you're going to have to take at 12, or you're willing to give up the other stuff to make sure you get the player that you want.
Look, I think we could do an entire podcast just on this trade. Let's get to a couple of the things here quickly before we have our interview with Hayden Hurst from South Carolina. Free agency, just touch on this real quick here, Buck. Ndamukong Suh, he's taking visits to New Orleans, Tennessee. Now reports are he's going to be out here in Los Angeles visiting the
Ooh-wee.
Rams. Thoughts?
Ooh-wee. The Rams with
him next to Donald.
Wow. So once again, and I hate to keep doing it because people are mad at me because I compared the Chicago Bears to the Philadelphia Eagles, but let's just look at what the Eagles were able to do. They took on all comers. They were not afraid to add talent on talent on talent on talent. So you look at the Rams potentially having the opportunity to take Aaron Donald and put him beside Ndamukong Suh. From a financial standpoint, they have to make sure that they pay Aaron Donald exactly what he's worth. They're going to have to break the bank for him. But on Suh, can you get Suh on a short-term rental? Can you get him on a shorter deal knowing that, Suh, you're going to have an opportunity to play beside Aaron Donald? Both of you guys are assured of getting one-on-ones any number of times in the game. That's scary. What they can do is they can absolutely whoop you up front with those two guys. And so if I'm the LA Rams, because I saw this, this is crazy. What they were able to do in the back end, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, even Sam Shields, for the three corners, they're paying just about what they would have paid for Tremaine Johnson.
Wow.
So they've saved some money in that regard. Also, letting Sammy Watkins walk out the door, now that we know that he was signing a deal for 16 per,
crazy money.
You can take that money and redirect it to the big bodies. We've talked about it. Investing in the trenches will never lead you wrong. And so if they're able to get Ndamukong Suh to go or Aaron Donald, the defense gets better. They got Alec Ogletree's numbers off the books when they traded him to the Giants. The Rams are sitting pretty. They haven't done anything splashy, like flashy or splashy in free agency, but they could get a crown jewel in Ndamukong Suh. Woo.
It's interesting to me. I went and tweeted this out last week, looking at the teams that invest heavy in the offense and defensive lines.
Oh, yeah, we talked about it a little
Philly
bit.
Philly and Jacksonville and the investments that they've made there. How about this? Just look at the NFC, which to me it's set up, especially as Tom Brady gets to the end and Roethlisberger gets to the end. The NFC is going to run the NFL for a long, long
Absolutely.
Time. Absolutely. All the young quarterbacks there, the talent in that division is ridiculous. So, or in that conference. So just look at these teams here. Minnesota, who won the North last year, they just made a big-time signing on the defensive side of the ball, Sheldon Richardson. So that defensive line, one of the premier defensive lines in the league. Now you throw in another guy like Sheldon Richardson into the front. The Rams, who we're talking about here, the Rams and the Saints both jostling for Ndamukong Suh to try and add him to the mix. Philadelphia Eagles won the whole thing. Defensive line was outstanding. They go had Michael Bennett and Haloti Ngata. So it's not as necessary the okay, here's where we're strong, here's where we're weak, let's try and get better where we're weak. It's like, no, this is where we're good, we're going to be great. And these teams are investing heavily in the trenches, especially in the NFC. They're going to be able to rush the passer, man. You better have a quarterback that can get it out, a quarterback that's durable, and you better invest in your offensive line as well if you're going to want to come out of the NFC anytime soon.
Oh, it's a big boy conference.
Woo.
It is a conference where we're seeing dominant football. You have to be able to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. You have to have a number of pass rushers that can get there. And the best way that people are telling me, inside pass rush is the new marquee position. It used to be always the outside guy. Well, now the two top positions that you have to have on defense, you need to have an outside guy and an inside guy because the pressure up front inside is terrific. And so you're looking at what the Rams are contemplating doing. You see what the Vikings have done in adding Sheldon Richardson. We've seen the Philadelphia Eagles continue to add pieces with Michael Bennett and Haloti Ngata. Right now, the trend is you better be good with the big boys. Mm-hmm. And because you're not. That leads me back to who? The New York Giants.
Oh, you're going double
down?
The
New York Giants. And that's why he got to get the hog mollies. Because eventually, if they're going to get to the playoffs and they're going to have to face those guys, they got to have someone that can stop those guys. You can't do it with one of those cute quarterbacks on the sideline. They're going to get a big body, a hog molly. Hog molly.
Better interior duo in sub. Sue and Aaron Donald together with the Rams. Ooh. Or are we going to go with Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox in Philly?
I'll go with Sue and Donald inside.
Just because Donald's so rare.
Yeah, Donald's ridiculous. But even Sue.
Michael Bennett's a bad dude, too, though.
He is a bad dude, but Sue is mean. He has some
extra
stuff.
He's just going to eat up a bunch of bodies and free him up to go hunt. But it's interesting to look at. This NFC is going to be fun to watch. No,
but here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
All those personalities, potentially, and Ndamukong Suh has a strong personality. Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, strong personalities. Aaron Donald strikes me as quiet, but he probably has a little something to him.
You got the grandfather.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot to manage. You got to have a zookeeper.
Wade is like Jerry Tarkanian. It makes it all work, man. He's fine.
He's going to bite the towel that's wrapped in a towel.
Yes, yes. Just get all wet.
They may have a little sauce in it.
Yeah.
They may have a little something to take it off.
Oh, yeah. Wade can handle it. He's fine. a couple other signings here in free agency. Real quick, Tyrann Mathieu and Nate Solder. Anything jump out to you? Tyrann Mathieu goes to the Houston Texans. Nate Solder goes to the Giants in their bid to upgrade for your guy, Eli Manning.
he's my guy, but – Tyrann Mathieu, Honey Badger going to Houston is a big pick because Romeo Crennel does a great job of putting people in a situation where they can thrive. They signed Jonathan Joseph back. The thing that was missing, their defense fell apart last year under Mike Vrabel. Can Romeo fix it? The best way to fix it is to add more playmakers. That's what Tyrann Mathieu is. Nate Solder is someone they had to get. When they missed on Andrew Worrell, that's the guy that they
from,
missed.
From Carolina.
From Carolina. They missed out on getting the guard. They had to make sure that they got some help for the offensive line. Nate Solder was the best guy on the market. He'll protect the blind side. And because they missed out in free agency, That's why they have to make up for it in the draft. That's why you're going to see Quentin Nelson wear big blue.
Wait, Eli Manning is what?
37?
No.
Oh, is he?
Oh, he's my guy?
My guy.
Oh, he's my guy.
Yeah.
He's my guy.
Bucky doesn't like that. Yeah. Bucky did not like that at all.
No.
No, as many things I've written about him, like, I can't say he's my guy, but I can say that Quentin Nelson is his pacifier.
Yeah.
There you go.
Pacifier. It's a big pacifier.
If we had graphics, we'd love to have like a little baby with a pass.
Coddling.
And Quentin Nelson's face on the baby.
Oh, gosh. All right. I wrote this in this part of the show because it's like a confessional for me. So I don't even need you to add anything. I just need to get this off my chest because it keeps me up at night. There's always a few players where you have your grades on them. You talk to folks around the league and they're in a different spot than you are. And so you go, okay, look, I'm always willing to stand alone and be the guy that just kind of, I'm going to stick by my conviction. I don't want to end up being wrong on somebody else's opinion. I'm going to be wrong on my own opinion. But these three players, like just talking to folks around the league, the grades are all over the place on them. And where I have them, I just don't feel comfortable. Like I just need more. I'm still sorting through it. So this is my confessional, Buck. Don't even have to say anything, okay? Colton Miller, tackle from UCLA. Unbelievable workout. Top 15 pick type workout. I didn't love the tape when I watched him. I did not love the tape against A&M. I didn't love the tape against Oregon. I see he's big. He's athletic. I get it. I don't think there's many pass rushers in the Pac-12. So I don't know. That's one that I struggle with. Malik Jefferson, linebacker from Texas.
Wait.
No, I'm going to get through. I'm just going to make my confession. You can go what you want to do. Malik Jefferson from Texas. Explosive athlete. I think, and even talking to Charlie Strong, he even mentioned it, you got to play him out in the edge a little bit where he can see, run, and hit. Gets a little bit lost in the traffic inside. But just in terms of the value of him, right now I have him just outside my top 50, so I kind of have him in that late second round, early third round type range. And I just go, man, is this guy going to end up being some all-pro, and I'm just too low on him. He's a great athlete. And then the last one is who we've talked about already is Mason Rudolph. You touched on the opinions being all over the place. I like certain things about him. I love his size. I love his toughness. I think he's accurate underneath especially. He's actually got a really accurate deep ball. He's accurate underneath. Some of the intermediate drive stuff it concerns me a little bit, and the adjustment from that offense will be something to take into account. But I don't have him in my top 50 right now. I know there's folks that think he's a first-round caliber player. Just not in a comfortable place with any of these three guys. So I got it off my chest. I just had to share that.
I mean, it's tough. We all go through that. I went through a little bit of that yesterday when I was looking at tape. Colton Miller, I think, is very, very interesting.
What do you think about him?
He's interesting because he's big and athletic. You talked about the top 15 workout. And when you look at the tape, he has some flaws and some issues that show up. But is he any different than Garrett Bowles and the guy that we saw at Utah? Like, I mean, you know, does he fall in line with that? I think the main thing is you do see that he is athletic. And he may have some struggles. And he may not be a guy that can roll right in, but in the right situation. So most recent mock, I put him with the L.A. Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So he could play behind Andrew Whitworth. Maybe they can develop him or whatever.
Good spot for him.
I think expectations have to be managed. If he has to play right away, I think you're a little nervous. However, it's hard to find guys who are
size,
that athletic, that can move around like that, and who have been – decent to slightly above decent on tape. Like that, there's a lot to be said.
He's going
to
go.
Yeah,
no
he's going to go. So I can understand the concern. Malik Jefferson, for me, I different taste for everybody.
Yeah.
Depending on what you want to do on defense, how you see your defense evolving, how you want to use your personnel, he's going to go higher or lower on the board. What he is at his best, man, when you let him just see ball, get ball, he can make
run
plays.
And hit.
But if you're asking him to read and react and to do a lot of things where he has to take on blocks, that's not it. I think whoever takes him, the defense coordinator, has to have a clear picture of what he wants to do with him, and he puts him in a situation where he can be successful. That is critical. And Mason Rudolph is the same. It's funny because the scouts around me at the pro day really worried about his athleticism,
mm-hmm.
his movement skills. They didn't like necessarily the way they moved, felt like he was a statue. I didn't see him as an athlete of that regard, but what I saw him was a guy that is a high football IQ guy, a guy that can get the ball out of his hands quickly and accurately. I think he can play in that 0 to 15 to 20 yard box. A lot of intermediate throws, ball comes out on time, he can do all this stuff. It is critical for him that he has a supporting cast where guys can get open and create separation because he's not going to be able to extend plays with his feet.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily have the arm to kind of throw guys open consistently, particularly down the field. So he needs a very, very good supporting cast. But I compared him to – it's funny. Different comparison because this guy's more athletic, but they remind me of the same. I compared him to Nick Foles when I did the evaluation.
I'd say the same thing.
Like, that's kind of how I see him. Now, the trick is when we graded Nick Foles and those guys, we graded those guys in second, third-round talents. Mason potentially could be a first-round player, but that's kind of how I see him. I see him as a Nick Foles type where you have the pieces around him. You have a quarterback coach and an offense coordinator that can work with him and do some things. He could be successful. It's just a matter of, is he going to be a transcendent star that can go anywhere? No.
Yeah, that's my – look, we share a brain. I just wrote down Foles. The first thing I did when I watched him, this kid was a tight end his freshman year in high school, ended up switching high schools and kind of overlooked a little bit through the recruiting process. And guy's just been nothing but productive and won a bunch of football games. He's a good player. I just struggle where to slot him in this draft class. Anyways, look, that was fun talk there. I'm looking forward to this next interview here, though, because Hayden Hurst – what a fascinating story for the tight end from South Carolina. Great player and a really, really interesting dude. Here's our chat with Hayden Hurst. All right, Buck, excited to be joined by South Carolina tight end Hayden Hurst, taking some time out before his pro day tomorrow to visit with us. Hayden, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Back up in Columbia for a few days. You know, excited to get to pro day and show what I got, man.
Before we get to pro day, I want to ask you the one question I think is on everybody's mind. When you see that dude from Houston on their basketball team with the man bun, I mean, does he even come close to as strong as your man bun game is?
He has more of what I've called a top knot. You know, mine's kind of, I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
Mine's more towards the middle of the back of my head. But his is more on top of his head, and then he's got the side shave. But, I mean, to each their own, man.
I'm good, Buck. Go ahead. It's all yours.
That's pretty funny. Obviously, you've had a long journey to get to South Carolina. Talk about your experience playing baseball before you made the move to South Carolina.
Yeah, growing up, I kind of did both sports, but everybody told me, baseball was always going to be the answer. You know, I played 1 year of high school football, which was my junior season. I got drafted in 2012 by the Pirates and, played in their minor league system for 3 years. And then that didn't really work out and decided to walk on at South Carolina.
What surprised you about baseball, by the way, you didn't expect going through? I mean, the minor league circuit, I've had close friends that have gone all the way through that route. But what was that experience like compared to what people glamorize that experience to be like?
You know, everybody here is, professional baseball. You know, I think you're playing in the big leagues, in big league stadiums every single day. And it's, when you're in the minor leagues, it's not like that. You got to work your way up. You're on bus rides. You're eating box lunches. And like you said, it's not exactly the most glamorous lifestyle that people kind of crack it up to be.
You guys weren't staying in Ritz-Carlton every week, huh?
Absolutely not.
No, but let's take it even further. Your extensive experience, you talked about playing only 1 year of high school football. What did you learn from baseball that has been able to translate to your game in football?
Really the best thing that, baseball taught me was, it just kind of humbled me, because coming out of high school, everybody told me I was going to be great. I was going to be in the big leagues in 2-3 years. And it really was polar opposite of that. I struggled, didn't even really pitch in games. And then, fought my way out of it and, walked on at South Carolina and was looking to play and have some fun playing college football. But, to the extent that I've kind of played myself into, potentially being a day one pick here in a few weeks is kind of surreal to me.
Take me back to the moment where you got in for the first time at South Carolina, because I've got some friends on that staff. Coach Elliott was one of my coaches in college. Had told me about how you were doing some things in practice, and it eventually was like, hey, what are we doing? Let's get this guy the ball. Let's get him involved. What was that first experience like for you getting out there and getting some meaningful minutes?
I kind of played sparingly throughout my first year, my freshman season. I was mostly a wide receiver. They put me in there a little bit. I think my first, extensive action was against Texas A&M, where actually my roommate Perry threw me a 50-yard, crossing route, and I took it down about like the 10-yard line. And to catch that pass and silence 110,000 people on my first catch in college football was kind of wild.
And thinking about that, starting as a wide receiver, then moving inside to tight end, what has been the biggest adjustment? You didn't have a lot of high school experience. Has the physicality, blocking, what has been the thing that you have had to really pick up during your college days?
Just the biggest thing, man, is, your footwork, being aggressive, because, in the SEC, you play against first-round draft picks on that edge every single week. So you got to bring it. And, you know, they're quick, and if you don't get your hands on them, they're going to try to drive you back into the quarterback.
One of my favorite things about your game is how they use you on these tight end reverses. You don't see that a lot at the NFL level, but they will hand you the ball and you'll come underneath. Basically, if you're watching like a fly sweep, except you're giving the ball to the tight end. How much fun was that for you as a ball carrier? Because you did some damage as a ball carrier.
I mean, it was awesome. It kind of took me back to my middle school days, you know, when I was playing fullback and they would hand it off in our offense. But, you know, I really enjoyed it. You know, like I said, I think I ended up with like 13 carries or something like that. And, you know, anytime where I can get my hands on the football and intentionally take it all the way is awesome.
So when you look ahead to the Sunday game and you look at tight ends, guys that play your position, is there anybody that you pattern your game after, that you model your game after?
You know, being in the Carolinas, I've always kind of watched Greg, you know, and getting to see him and actually meet him in Indianapolis was pretty awesome. I got to talk to him for a little bit, but just the way that he does both phases of the game, you know, he's not afraid to stick his face in there and block. And then, I mean, just the way he extends the field vertically is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, my notes on you is as a blocker, you're definitely willing and the effort is there and you're a little bit inconsistent. But I'll tell you what, when you watch tight ends nowadays, there's guys that don't want any part of it. It looks like that's something you're comfortable with and something you want to attack and something you continue to get better at.
Absolutely. I mean, whatever the coach is asking me to do, you know, I want to do everything the best of my ability. You know, if that's blocking, you know, 70 plays a game and catching one pass or, you know, vice versa, you know, I'm going to do it. And I don't have any fear when I'm on a ball field. You know, I'm going to take on everybody, you know, that comes across my face.
So if you had to break your game down on tape, what would you say the strongest part of your game is?
I would say my route running and my speed. I think people kind of underestimate that. You know, for my size, I'm able to pick them up and put them down and get open. You know, everything that kind of comes my way, I catch it. I think I had one drop in two seasons. So, I mean, definitely some stuff I need to work on, like you said. I mean, I've been playing tight end for 2 years now. So, I mean, sky's the limit for me, man.
Yeah, 2 years at the position, you're probably going to be a first-round pick. I think you're doing all right there, buddy. my comparison, when I watch you, I actually saw a little bit of Hunter Henry, who with the Chargers – we always are lobbying on this show and on our air about how they need to get him the ball more. But he's been very productive with the opportunities he's been given coming out of Arkansas. Again, a two-way guy. He can block you in the run game but also get down the seam and make some things happen. Have you seen Hunter Henry at all when you've been watching football on Sundays?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Hunter mainly was a big part of the reason why I kind of came out this year. I know he was a first-team All-SEC tight end, the first one taken in his draft class. So, I mean, that was – watching him and seeing what he did, kind of, you know, like I said, was a lot of my thought process going into this thing, you know. And actually one of the guys that I was able to work out with, Austin Allen, was his quarterback at Arkansas. So, you know, I got to ask him a lot of questions about how Hunter kind of carried himself and how he worked out. So, yeah, I've watched a lot of Hunter.
How did Austin say that you compare with Hunter?
He actually said that it was kind of weird how similar we were. You know, I don't want to compare myself to Hunter just yet. I mean, he's two years in the league, and he's been pretty productive. But, you know, Austin said he definitely saw a lot of similarities.
It's funny that you don't want to make comparisons, but I'll make a comparison. Guy that you reminded me of, Tyler Eifert from the Cincinnati Bengals. Coming out of Notre Dame, I saw a guy that was a red zone threat. I believe that you have the potential to be a dominant player down in the red zone. I've seen you work the middle of the field, getting down the seams. You talked about your route running, your pass catching ability, and your speed. Those are the kind of things that make you a mismatch nightmare. So I can kind of envision you doing some of the stuff that we've seen Tyler Eifert do in the National Football League.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, Tyler is an extremely, extremely productive player. You know, I've definitely seen the stuff that he's been able to do. When I was at South Carolina, we didn't get in the red zone a ton, so I wasn't able to show my skills there. But, you know, I'm hoping that I get with a pretty good team and, you know, we can scheme some stuff up and I can show my ability.
Anybody that's been successful in athletics or in life has goals. What's your goal for your first season in the NFL?
My biggest thing is I want to get on, you know, a successful team, you know, a team that wants to win, and just kind of surround myself in that culture. I want to be productive, you know, but again, you know, I'm not high on numbers and stuff like that. You know, whatever a team asks me to do, you know, whether it's, you know, come in and start right away and catch passes, you know, I want to be as productive as possible.
Well, that was a great answer.
That's a perfect answer to that question.
That was a really good answer.
Team, always get it back to the team and off the individual. Like, as an evaluator, we both scouted the NFL for a long time. So when you're asking those questions, there's an answer we're hoping to get. We understand when guys are going to say, "Look, I want to make the Pro Bowl. I want to catch 90 balls." But we like it when guys talk about having a successful team. That's you've been trained
team
well.
First, man.
You're either the best guy ever. You've been trained really well.
So now we'll go to strictly individual. We want to know, what is your biggest highlight?
My biggest highlight. The biggest one that comes to mind was that third down catch in our bowl game. The previous play let a guy, Rashawn Gary, get past me and sack Jake. And as soon as it happened, I kind of tapped Jake on the shoulder and I was like, "Hey man, let me get it back." And sure enough, the next play, third and 25, he threw it up to me and I jumped into two guys and pulled it down, and it actually led to the go-ahead touchdown.
What was the play call there, and what was the coverage?
I don't remember the exact play call, but during the game, they played a lot of man coverage on us, and it was actually a busted play. He scrambled right outside the pocket, and then he saw me working towards the sideline, and there were two guys there, and I guess he trusted me, and I went up and caught it.
That's big time. How about your greatest hardship? It could be on the field, off the field, the greatest hardship you've overcome.
I mean, again, going back to baseball, those 3 years, I try to explain it to people. I came out of high school, was really, really, successful in everything that I had done. Never really experienced anything, failure, stuff like that. Got with the Pirates, again, figured I'd be pitching in the big leagues. Couldn't even pitch in games, and I developed the yips. Couldn't even throw on a foul line like little leaguers do. And tried to battle through that, talking to multiple doctors and, sports psychologists for about 3 years. And just never figured out the root of it. And, made a life decision to switch back to football. And, I haven't really looked back since.
So we all are inspired by somebody. Sometimes it's in the home. Sometimes it's out of the home. Who is your hero?
It's got to be my dad, man. Like I said, he's been the one sticking by me through these past, 5 years. It's been like you said, it's not the most conventional route to get to where I'm at today, but my dad and, my mom will be mad if I don't mention her as well, but just that support system back home, sticking by me these past 5-6 years, everybody thought I was crazy when I was telling them I was quitting baseball, but, hopefully they'll be happy here in a month.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, last question, then we'll let you run. A lot of times as scouts, you like to ask guys who the best player they played against was, and you'll get names, and it's helpful for us. The same names keep coming up over and over again. But it's almost baseball season, and with your time in the minor leagues, I want to know who's the best baseball player that you played against. It might be somebody still in the minors that's coming up. You can do some scouting for us, or maybe it's somebody that's already vaulted his way to the leagues. Who's the best baseball player you played against?
Best baseball player? Spring training, my second year, I got to pitch against Delmon Young. He was with the Phillies at the time. I don't know if he's still playing or not, but, I looked at who was, on deck, and when he came up to the plate, had to step off and be like, "Oh, man, this is the first big league guy I have to face." took a deep breath and got in there, and I think he popped up to our right fielder. But, that was kind of one of the moments where I was like, man, this is getting pretty real.
That is fantastic. Well, you don't have to worry about Delmon Young anymore. You might have to worry about, blocking J.J. Watt or Jadeveon Clowney or something like that. But those are fun challenges ahead. Thank you so much, Hayden, for taking some time for us. You're one of our favorite players in the draft, and we look forward to following your journey.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, there you go, Buck. Hey, how cool is that dude?
Great, man. Terrific. I think the big thing, my takeaway will be his perspective. I do believe baseball certainly humbled him, the lack of success, but I think that lack of success has fueled his success in football.
Yes.
You talk about an older guy that would be coming into the locker room, a guy that kind of understands how to be a pro. I took all those things away from that interview, even the way he talked about what his goals were. It was definitely
more
team over me. Those are the kinds of guys that you like to bring in. You're right. He's going to be a first-round pick at the bottom first round. There are a couple teams that need him. Imagine him with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, my gosh. No-brainer. Trey Burton, see you later. Good
Trey
luck
Burton,
in Chicago.
See you later. They took Brett Celek out.
Retired.
Like, could be a nice little fit.
I've been saying Jacksonville, but then went out and paid ASJ, Austin Seferian Jenkins.
Yes.
Who, by the way, did you see that? I compared him to when he was coming out of the draft, somebody actually sent me a tweet from like 2013 or whenever he came out. Because when I was evaluating Austin Seferian Jenkins, I said he reminds me a lot of Mercedes Lewis.
Oh, how about that?
Now he's going to team up with him and maybe even eventually replace him. This is the first time in the history of Twitter somebody sent you something that you said previously that was not terrible. So whoever that guy was, thank you. Appreciate that. Nicely done. Hey, that's going to do it for us, Buck. Beefy episode, covered a lot of ground, but man, it is officially draft season, because we got Path to the Draft starting. We've got Mock Draft Live starts on Tuesday. We've got all of our podcasts coming your way here. So we are busy, but it's a fun busy.
Fun busy. We finally get a chance to take center stage. Center stage at the network.
No question. And the 360 series got off and running last week with Lamar Jackson. Which everybody seems to enjoy. If you haven't checked that out, be sure to check out that episode. It's Lamar Jackson 360 series episode. And guys, are we allowed to tease who we have coming up for this week? Well, who is it?
It's Derwin James, safety from Florida State.
There you go, Sully.
Yeah.
Derwin James 360 drops on Thursday, so be on the lookout for that as well. I know you got a lot of basketball to watch, but there's plenty of time for you to catch some of these podcasts while you're out mowing the lawn. Obviously, Sully has lots of time because his volunteers are done.
And Bucky, too.
Oh, the Tar Heels. Buck, are you okay?
Oh, I expected it. I didn't think we
were good. Yeah, he actually did
really?
Call it.
Yeah, I didn't think we were fine.
Hoosiers didn't even make the tournament. That's my team. So
more time for the 360s, less basketball.
Yes, there you go. Lots of 360s to be on the lookout for. Did see that we got a bunch more reviews and ratings there on Apple Podcasts. Appreciate you guys doing that for us. If you haven't already, man, that really does help us out. We're climbing up the rankings each and every week as we march towards the draft. We've got all your needs covered here on Move the Sticks. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.